We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hi, it's Erie County Executive Mark Polenkar coming to you live from the Rath Building in downtown Buffalo with another COVID-19 outbreak update. I am joined by Kendra from Deaf Access Services, who will be providing the American Sign Language for you today. Dr. Burstein is off today. She's been on some phone calls as well as emails. You're never truly off when it comes to the COVID-19 outbreak, though sometimes you get some time off for yourself. I wanted to give you the latest update and certainly hope that you are all doing as well as possible. As usual, the information that will be provided is as update as when it was put into the presentation about an hour or so ago. So it may have changed. It often does change. And just want to remind you that if for the latest information, you can go to our erie.gov/COVID-19 website, which is updated frequently with the latest information on the outbreak. As of this morning, there were 5,784 total positive cases out of 47,870 that have been tested since the beginning of the crisis. 504 people had died through yesterday. These were all lab-confirmed cases. There are no presumed positive cases. Each of these individuals had a positive case of COVID-19 while they were alive. On May 25th, there were 149 individuals in Erie County hospitals. We've seen a recent decline, even though the last couple of few days it's pretty much stabilized. But that's a good sign. We don't want to see it coming up. 26 individuals were in the ICU, and I believe it, even though it's blank on there, I think it was 15 individuals that had an airway assist. And you can see it on the chart here with regards to what was the last 2 weeks of patients in Erie County hospitals. The continual decline with regards to total hospitalizations, the last 3 days it's been pretty static, 150, 149, 149. The decline in total ICUs and the decline in ICU airway assists, which is also intubations. And we have seen a little uptick on May 25th with 5 individuals who deceased in hospital. Remember, this is not the death number that you see on this chart here is for hospitalizations and in hospital. It is not total death, including those that may occur elsewhere, such as a nursing home. So this is the death in a hospital, which is the metric that is followed and used by New York State as part of the 7 major metrics with regards to reopening. We do not want to see a rolling average of more than 5. Otherwise, we could lose the metric that we're in right now. Hospitalization data with regards to admissions. The last 2 days, we've had unfortunately, more admissions than discharges, though it is still a little bit smaller than where we would have to worry about potential increases in hospitalizations, knocking us out of the metric state uses. And the prior 5 days actually had more discharges, significantly more discharges than admissions. It's one of the reasons why we're seeing the hospitalization numbers in total go down. We generally get this information, and then there's a day or two lag from when you see it in the total hospitalizations, and it has more to do with the timing. They're not coming at the same time to New York State. So the admissions and discharges per day and the time that they do total hospitalizations come at a little bit different time. So we often see a day or two lag. So I would not be surprised if in tomorrow's data, which will be for May 26th, or Friday's data, which will be for today, May 27th, we actually saw an uptick in hospitalizations. Why? Well, you can see it on the screen here because there have been greater, 5 times as much in admissions versus discharge over the last 2 days. We had a really great period of discharges being greater than admissions. not so much anymore, and it would not shock me to see hospitalizations in total for Erie County go up when we get the latest data for what would be the 26th and the 27th. Hospitalization data for Western New York in total has continually gone down. There must be a new hospitalization in one of the other counties in Western New York, in Niagara, Chautauqua, Cattaraugus, or Allegheny, because there was this one-person individual increase for Western New York hospitalizations from the 24th to the 25th, while they stayed the same in Erie County. So that tells me that someone else is hospitalized new across Western New York. Ages by gender, these are COVID-19 cases. These are not deaths, but in total the cases. And you can see that females generally are higher in the 80-plus, while males are generally higher in every other age category with regards to the breakdown of males and females. It is actually 51% males that have COVID-19, 49% females, which is kind of opposite what our population is in Erie County, in which it's 51% females to 49% males. And then, of course, there's a big discrepancy in the 80-plus, primarily because women live longer than men, and they are just more of them in that age group. The mortality data, once again, you see the difference between males and females on the screen in front of you. And in every age category, males are outperforming, so to speak, women, except in the 80-plus, once again, because of the difference with regards to just women living longer and there being a greater percentage of them in the 80-plus category. This is data that we have been tracking for some time now with regards to mortality and breaking down by race, as well as with regards to ethnicity with Hispanic/Latino. And this has really gotten very close to what the population averages are for Erie County. For a while there, African-Americans, blacks, had made up nearly 33% of all deaths, which was ridiculous considering they make up less than 15% of the population of our county. But now we're actually trending to where it really is much more in line with the population averages. As you can see, for whites, it's almost identical to what the population average is. It's still slightly above where African-Americans should be based on population, but it's much better than it was. I'd like to give a lot of credit to folks out there, especially with the African-American Health Disparities Task Force, who worked very hard to ensure that proper resources, not only from the county level, but on the state level and through the Millennium Collaborative, were provided to ensure that individuals, people of color, were getting the information they need so they'd be properly tested, they would be quarantined if necessary, and I'm glad to see that that number has fallen back more in line with the general population numbers. And Hispanics, Latinos, of course, are still making up much less in population of those who've died in Erie County than their actually population total would indicate. 2% of fatalities as compared to 5.7% of the general population estimates based on the 2010 and as updated through 2018 census information. This is a very interesting little chart we haven't shown recently, but we've got some better newer data that shows that when it comes to the individuals who died based on population, there's actually more people that have died outside of the city of Buffalo than probably should have based on population numbers, though it's not really that big a difference. City of Buffalo makes up 27.9% of the people in Erie County based on the most recent census information, and it's made up 26% of the deaths. Erie County makes up the areas outside of the city of Buffalo. The two other cities in the 25 towns make up 72.1% of the population, and they made up 74% of the deaths. I think it's important to bring this up because we've heard some individuals say that the city of Buffalo has been extremely greater than it should be with regards to mortality and deaths as a percentage of the overall population, and this just shows that that's not true. It's actually right around where the percentages should be, and in fact, it's a little less. So if there are people out there who are trying to make hay saying that there's been a disproportionate number of deaths in the city of Buffalo compared to the actual population of Erie County, this indicates it's not the case. And as we showed you in the prior slide with regards to mortality data based on race and ethnicity, while there's a slight discrepancy, it's not great. And it's not compared to what we've seen elsewhere in the country where African-Americans and people of color are making up the vast majority of deaths, much more than their population would normally indicate. So we've done a pretty good job, I think, at our community of ensuring that we're taking care of all communities, especially communities of color. And once again, here's mortality data based on race and ethnicity, broken down by the city and the county, to show that in the city of Buffalo, 62 white individuals have deceased, 63 African Americans, and then there's a few others in there, including Asian Pacific Islanders, which we believe includes Burmese individuals, Karen of Burmese descent. So we are keeping track of this, but as has been indicated, things are starting to fall more in line with what the population totals normally would be for our community. Testing, we've really ramped up testing with regards to the diagnostic testing, which is the nasal swab testing. And what we're seeing is that the percentage of those who are testing positive is dropping. And it really is coming in line with the percentage of antibody testing, as I'll show you in the next slide. We are basically testing in this community anyone who wants a nasal swab test to determine if they have COVID-19 at that moment. And as you can see, based on last week's statistics, May 23rd, a little less than 8% of the population that were tested in that week tested positive. The week before, it was 8%. And you can see that number has continually dropped as we've tested more and more individuals in the population. So now the total number of individuals tested who've been confirmed positive is about 12%. But we're seeing this drop, which indicates that in the general population, COVID-19 is not certainly indicative of 12% of our population. It's really closer to 7.5% to 8%. And that, not surprisingly, matches up with what our most recent antibody testing has been showing. Antibody tests are provided to individuals who believe they may have had COVID-19 in the past. It's not to determine if you have COVID-19 now, and the average is 7.6%, with the last few weeks being between 7.3% and 7.5%. So what does that tell us here? Well, it tells us that there probably is between 7 and 8% of the population in Erie County that has either currently COVID-19 or contracted it in the past. And that should give us a little pause when we think about things, because that means there's about 92% of the population in Erie County that have not contracted the coronavirus. It is still out there. We're still testing for it, and we're still finding positive cases. It has not disappeared. It is still out there, and we want people to take appropriate measures when you're out there, like wearing your mask. Make sure you bring your mask and wear it in the public. If you're alone, if you're with family members, if you can be socially distant while still being out in public, then you're probably okay. But if you can't be socially distant, you should wear your mask, because it's still out there and people are still catching it. And as we've seen with the last 2 days' data with regards to hospitalizations, the admissions exceeded discharges. So it's still out there and people are still getting sick. Simple as that. Our response has been, since day one of when I declared the state of emergency, which was on March 15th. It's been more than 2 months since that point. It seems like it's been 2 years, been a long time. A lot has happened in that period. But we certainly thank everyone for their good response and work to get us to the point where we are today. Diagnostic testing, as I noted, is being offered at many locations across Erie County, including mobile sites that Erie County Department of Health runs. You need to call for an appointment. It's 858-2929. You can get it if you're sick and have the COVID-19 symptoms, or even if you're not sick, but you think you may have been exposed or at risk for being sick because you're in a high risk pool, so to speak, based on a job or some other reason, a family member who has it. You do not need a lab order or a doctor's referral, but an appointment is necessary, and the clinics are available in different locations and different days across Erie County. Once again, it is appointment only. It is not, you can walk in, and if you do make an appointment, please show up. We've had a lot of people who just don't show up, and that's not fair to our employees. It's not fair to others who want to get an appointment that day but can't because it's booked. So if you make an appointment, please show up. And the same thing with antibody testing. We are now opening up the lines once again to schedule appointments for antibody testing, though the test will not begin until at least June. We had such huge demand, we had to cut off the antibody testing for the month of May because it was full. But now we can restart antibody testing. So if you call 858-2929, listen for the options and press the option for antibody testing, you can get antibody testing. This, once again, is by appointment only. There are going to be various locations across Erie County. And when you hit the right option and you talk to the representative from the Department of Health, they'll tell you the options that are available and the dates and times. It is not a drive-through. It does require you to come in. It requires a blood draw. If you don't like seeing your blood or getting blood drawn, then the antibody testing that we perform through Erie County may not be for you. But if you do want to get an antibody test and you think that you may have been exposed or had it in the past, you should get an antibody test to figure out if you did have the coronavirus and if you potentially now have antibodies, which would help you with some immunity. We have a new website link on our COVID-19 page, and it is identifying all the locations that we are aware of, permanent ones, with regards to COVID-19 diagnostic testing and antibody testing across Erie County. It is at erie.gov/COVID test sites. And you can then click on the stars once you get there, and it'll give you the address, the phone number, the hours of operation. Almost every one of those on there is an appointment only, but some can be walk-in, especially for the diagnostic nasal swab test. So we want people to understand that there are lots of locations across Erie County, dozens of them right now, including in the city of Buffalo, on the west side and on the east side, which were areas of concern for us. So there's lots of locations. And then the county has, as we noted, mobile clinics in which we move them. And they're on particular days. They're not stationary, but we had one in Springville that I was at recently. Today, I believe there's a mobile clinic going on at ECC South. We've had them in the north part of the county. We've certainly had them in the central part of the county. But you can look them up at the website at erie.gov/COVID test sites. Commissioner's isolation orders, still some questions as to what that means. If you are going to get a diagnostic test and you're sick, you have to assume that you have COVID-19. You need to tell us that you're sick. You need to tell the people when you arrive that you're sick, and you have to isolate yourself until you get your test results, because you may have COVID-19. If you are not sick and you're getting the diagnostic test, you do not need to isolate yourself, but you do need to monitor your symptoms. And if you do get sick from the period in which you made the appointment through when you get your results, you should notify your doctor. If you don't have a doctor, notify the Department of Health with regards to what actions you should take at that point. Moving forward, we are in phase one, of course, of the reopening of a four-phase plan for New York State, in which Western New York is, of course, in phase one. You can get more information on reopening at the forward.ny.gov website that New York has put out. It also includes the regional monitoring dashboard that shows if we met the metrics, which we have. We want to keep those metrics in place. We don't want to fall out of those metrics, because if we do, we're probably not going to move to phase two. And if you're a business and you're questioning what level I'm in, my business is in, is in phase two, phase three, phase four, you can actually use a specialized tool that New York State has created that allows you to look up the type of industry that you have, based on industry numbers and description of the industry, to see what phase you actually fall in. So if you have a question, go to this website here that you see at the special lookup tool that New York State has at businessexpress.ny.gov, and then you follow the link forward to determine where you fall in that situation. As we noted, phase one is open, I'm very glad to hear, based on the conference call that I have at 4 o'clock with other Western New York leaders, that as of last week, more than 1,000 businesses had filed plans with New York State. Most of those are in phase one, but some of them are in phase two in preparation for phase two coming. But these are the ones that are open in phase one. And of course, phase two is what we're expecting next, which includes professional services, retail, administrative support, real estate, rental and leasing. And then, of course, the important one as it pertains to me at this moment, barbershops and beauty parlors, beauty salons. To open whenever we get to phase two, you got to have a plan in place. You have to file it with New York State, and you don't need to file it, but you do need to file an affirmation with New York State that you have a plan in place, and it must be available for your staff to review. And it is a safety plan. And here's a little summary of what it is. We had a discussion on this with our business task force last week. Businesses have to create a safety plan. It's available for their employees, and if they have patrons, customers to review. You have to have detailed guidelines that show how you're going to protect everyone, what steps you're taking. The state and the county do not need to have those plans, but you do have to have them available, and you do need to file the affirmation on the state site. It then goes into a central database that we get access to, and they show us who has done it and who has not, so we'll know who's filed. So if we get a report of a place that's open, or a place that does not have a safety plan available for review by their employees or customers. We will get to see if they actually filed the affirmation with New York State. If not, they could be shut down, and we really don't want to do that. As I've said before, if you're a business owner or manager, get your safety plan done, file the affirmation with New York State, and hopefully everything will be fine then. Contact tracing, this is very important information. We've had some businesses ask, do we need to do contact tracing if an employee or a patron or an invitee, visitor, actually that we know of, has COVID-19, comes down with a case? You do not need to do contact tracing. The county has to do contact tracing, but you do need to cooperate with us. And so if you have a worker or a visitor that tests positive, you are required, I should say the health department's required to do all contact tracing, which means we're going to be required to talk to you as the employer and find out information as to who that individual was in contact with, and then talk to those individuals to determine whether or not they have COVID-19 and what they need to do to monitor their symptoms. So the businesses, you don't need to do the contact tracing, but you do need to work with us. We're in the business of contact tracing, not you. And please work with us so that we can eliminate further risks to our community from those who are still contracting coronavirus and are out in the community and may be spreading it. Last week in the business task force, we announced two new subcommittees, a small micro business subcommittee and a marketing subcommittee. And just as it sounds like, they're going to be working on those issues with regards to small businesses that have been seriously hurt and what we can do to help them in government, as well as marketing committee to help market the businesses that are here so that we can basically buy local, spend local. As our economy grows, we want to ensure that we're supporting our local businesses, especially those that are owned and based here. And so we're going to have a marketing committee working on that. And I want to thank all the members of these committees for the work that they're doing to reopen New York, reopen Erie County safely. We are doing a lot here internally, so it's why it's very important we have this business task force in place with all the committees. And I want to specifically thank all the members for their good work in helping us reopen safely and ensuring that businesses have the tools that they need so that they can grow themselves and restore themselves and hopefully be stronger than they were before. There's lots of resources available. I'm not going to read them all, but we do want you to understand that there's lots of resources available through Erie County, through New York State, through the ECIDA to assist local businesses, whether it's our Erie Grown to help our local agricultural community, the work that the ECIDA is doing with regards to providing specialized loans and assistance, the work that New York State's doing, and of course the federal government. We want to help our local businesses get through this, and there's lots of resources, and all these resources, if you have any questions, you can always go to the erie.gov/COVID-19 website and click on the business page, and we have so much information there. You'll be bored reading after a while, but we want you to get there and get the information that's important. Other matters, I want to talk about three other things not related to COVID-19, but are important. A lot of people heard that we had to shut down the Eternal Flame Trail at Chestnut Ridge Park on Saturday due to two incidences that were serious injuries, a broken leg and a broken ankle. The Eternal Flame Trail is a wonderful trail. I've walked it multiple times myself, but it is not an easy trail, especially for those who've never really hiked. You have to traverse the creek, Shale Cleek Creek. It can be very muddy, and if you remember, we had about 1 inch of rain on Friday night to Saturday through Saturday morning, and then we had more rain on Saturday. The creek was very high. The trail was very muddy, and people were trying to traverse it in flip-flops and sneakers. It really is a trail in which you need appropriate footwear, like hiking boots, or some sort of shoe that has a good grip on the bottom. Flat bottom sneakers, flip-flops, is just not the right thing to wear. So if you're going to go do a hike on the Eternal Flame Trail, please be advised first. It is not necessarily the easiest hike in the world. You're going down a steep grade. You're going up a steep grade just to get into the ravine. Then you have to get in a ravine in which you're walking through Shale Creek at various times. You have to traverse the creek, which, of course, if you're walking on shale and it's wet, it's very slippery. You may have to traverse a down tree or two. Sometimes we have trees that fall, especially after rains, and our rangers will get in there and try to clean them up as quickly as possible, but they don't always get them every day. So we have reopened the Eternal Flame Trail, but we want people to understand whenever you go hiking, no matter where it is, the Eternal Flame Trail or one of our other trails, please wear appropriate footwear. Understand what you're getting yourself into, because The two individuals who suffered the serious injuries had to be brought out in baskets up the side of the ravine. They could not be walked up. It was too difficult. It was too dangerous. And I know if those individuals were here today, they'd probably say how scared they were as they were basically being pulled up the ravine walls, which are quite steep and high, to safety. So I want to thank the emergency responders for the work that they did to save those individuals and to help them. I certainly hope that they're doing well, the individuals who are injured. And to the rest of you who are going to use the Eternal Flame Trail or other trails that we provide, make sure you use appropriate footwear and understand where you're getting into, because it may be more difficult than you think and often is. Little point of personal privilege in the two next matters here. I want to give a shout out and say hi to my father, Charles Poloncarz. Dad is in hospital. He's in Mercy Hospital. Most of you don't know this, but he was taken by ambulance late Thursday morning, early Friday morning, after not a COVID related. It has nothing to do with COVID. But he has some strange infection that they've been trying to deal with. He had emergency surgery on Saturday. I know he's quite mad right now that I'm probably saying this and letting the rest of the world know. You know my father. He can be a little grumpy at times. But I'm sure as I speak on behalf of my entire family, I just want to wish Dad well. We're hoping he get out soon. To those of you out there, I hope you can give a thought or prayer for my father so that he can get a complete recovery after this emergency surgery with the infection that he had. And I'm hoping he gets out soon so he can be like this picture here with me from last year in which we were golfing, because I know he wants to get on the golf course, but I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, Dad. But get well soon, and I want to thank the staff at Mercy Hospital for the great work that you've been doing and taking care of my father during this period. I really appreciate it. Tough. We can't get in there and see him. None of us can get in there. Even I can't get in the hospital and see my father. But I know he's in good hands at Mercy Hospital, and I want you to get well soon, Dad. I love you very much. And then finally, this final, I want to close in memory of Amanda Bolstead. Amanda is the woman pictured in the photograph here with her companion, Butch Yeager, and two of her children. She has three children, Josh, Jordan, and Jaden. This is Jordan and Jaden. Amanda is my cousin, or I should say was my cousin. She was riding on the back of the motorcycle with Butch that was struck on Route 5 on Saturday. They were just driving along. They were doing the appropriate thing. Someone pulled out of a gas station on Route 5 and did not do what we certainly ask every year people to do, which is look twice. You need to save a life. These are the signs that you often see. We have a press conference annually with the bait, and I just, like the rest of my family, got the news late Saturday that their motorcycle was struck. Butch is in hospital. We certainly are thinking and praying for him as he recovers from his injuries, but my cousin Amanda did not. She died on Saturday because someone didn't pay attention and drove out and struck them head on, and she was killed. So to her children, Josh, Jordan, and Jaden, I give you my deepest sympathies and condolences. To Butch, we certainly deepest sympathies and condolences, as well as wish you best in a recovery that I know is not going to be easy. To my cousins, Jim and Gina, certainly deepest sympathies. I've been in contact with Jim a lot and Gina on Facebook. And then, of course, this is my Aunt Cookie's youngest daughter. My Aunt Cookie, a lot of you know my Aunt Cookie. My Aunt Carolyn Poloncarz, my father's older sister. You have my deepest condolences and sympathies, Aunt Cookie, on the loss of Amanda. We are all very disappointed and sad that we have to deal with this. You hope that you never have a family member that goes through this. And I just want to remind everybody once again, all you got to do is look twice. You may save a life. The life may be a family member of yours, and maybe someone that you know. It might not be, but you want to do what's right. Motorcyclists have a right to be on the road, and Butch and Amanda were on the road on a beautiful Saturday day. Weather was great at that time. Someone didn't pay attention, and she's gone now. So to her children, my deepest sympathies. To the rest of the family, I join you in the solemn occasion of having to deal with the death of a loved one. I hadn't seen Amanda much in the last 10 years. I did see her and Butch occasionally, but she was part of our family. And to all the family members, my deepest sympathies on our loss. And in the future, once again, to each and everyone else out there, please look twice. Save a life. you probably will save a life if you just look twice instead of just speeding out and doing your own thing, not paying attention and striking someone else who has a right to be on the road, and in this situation, killing them. With that, we'll close this portion of this and turn it over to questions to the members of the media. And I just want to dedicate today's presentation to my cousin, Amanda. Thank you.
Okay.
First up, let me turn up the volume here, is from WKBW-TV, Channel 7, Jeff Russo.
Good afternoon, County Executive. I'm sorry for your loss there and the discussion there. I'm sorry to hear that. I appreciate your time this afternoon. I know the focus has been on COVID-19 clearly and will be for weeks to come. My question today is on future business for the county and future plans, where things stand for the potential of a new convention center and how that may be impacted when you talk about the loss of a hotel like the Hyatt Regency downtown.
I have put a call into Paul Snyder Jr. I've not heard back from him. He may have called in the last couple hours or so. I don't know. I've been quite busy. It certainly, I don't know with a full status. I don't know if from talking, because I haven't had a chance to talk to the Snyders, what the status of the Hyatt is. My understanding, it was Hyatt that said that they were ending their affiliation. Mr. Snyder was disputing that. I need to talk to him first. The convention center is something that certainly is going to be needed for our community. It has been put on the back burner. My goal was to try to get out there and raise the money that would be necessary to start building this convention center. But of course, with COVID-19, everything else has been put on the back burner. And so right now, when it comes to plans with the convention center, it is something that we are still going to go ahead with. It's just been delayed. And when the time is right, we'll start thinking about that again. Unfortunately, in the meantime, I got to deal with the issues associated with COVID-19, not just the health issues, but the financial issues with where the county goes moving forward. And as I said back when we talked about the new convention center and the location that we wanted to put it, the county could never afford it on its own. We would need state help. State needs help right now, just like local governments need help. So the convention center is on the back burner, and hopefully within the next 24 to 36 hours, I'll have more information with regards to what's going on with the Hyatt. Channel 4, you're welcome. Channel 4, Marley Tuskus.
Hi, County Executive. First, let me offer my deepest condolences about your cousin and wishing your father a speedy recovery. I wanted to ask, we've been getting a lot of questions about families wanting to visit their elderly family members or loved ones. Obviously, you know, it's been quite a while before they've been able to see them. At what point can family members start visiting these loved ones, and what's the best way to keep them safe?
Well, there's two things you have to think about. There's those that are in a nursing home assisted living facility, or those that are just in their own personal residence. If it's a nursing home assisted living facility, that will not change until such time as New York State allows nursing homes and assisted living facilities to let people visit their loved ones. If it's a private residence, a private apartment complex or their house, I mean, you could theoretically go visit your loved one right now, but you really need to take appropriate social distancing guidelines in place, such as wearing a mask and using hand sanitizer and so forth, trying to avoid touching that individual. If you think you may be at risk for coronavirus, you shouldn't. If you think you're at risk for coronavirus, you shouldn't visit them at all. If you have an antibody testing or something like that, I would remind everybody that if it shows that you have contracted it in the past, you probably don't have it at that moment, so you may be safe to give that in to meet that person. But it's going to be some time, I think, until they allow individuals into nursing homes and assisted living facilities. We know about the problems with nursing homes in Western New York, so we certainly don't want to put more people at risk. And if you are going to go visit a loved one in their own private residence, you really need to follow the strictest social guidelines or social distancing guidelines that you possibly can, starting with wearing a mask, because that is the greatest method of transmission, is through the disbursement of what comes out of your mouth. If you're sneezing, what comes out of your nose? touching an individual if you have the virus on your hands. So you can visit them now, but if you do so, do it in such the safest manner you possibly can. Channel 2, WGRZ-TV, Stephen Brown. Steve.
Good afternoon, County Executive. I'm very sorry about the loss of your cousin, and I certainly do hope that you and your dad are out golfing sometime very soon. In regards to the data that you've been reviewing and the talk yesterday by the Lieutenant Governor that the region is on track for Phase 2, I was wondering what your thoughts were about that. Do you concur that the region, at least Erie County, is on track to move towards Phase 2? Just wondering what your thoughts were.
Yes, we are on track, though the last 2 days of hospitalization data, in which there were greater than admissions and discharges, is always a little concerning. Though, if you do a three-day rolling average, we appear to be less than 15, so I think we're still in a pretty good position. I know a lot of people are worried about whether or not there was going to be spread of the coronavirus, COVID-19, because of the activities that we're engaged in over the Memorial Day weekend. We really won't see hospitalizations increase until usually 10 days to 2 weeks after someone's received or has the coronavirus, contracted it. So if we continue in the direction that we're in right now, I think we're gonna meet phase two after we have those 2 weeks of breakage between when we entered phase one and when we can enter phase two. So that's basically June 2nd, June 3rd, somewhere around there. So I do feel we're on track. The question is, will we see a spike in hospitalizations? And we're just going to have to keep a watch on that. So I think we're on track, and let's hope that we don't have that spike in hospitalizations or deaths in hospitals that could toss us aside. Spectrum News, Aaron.
Hey, County Executive. Echoing what everyone else said, sorry about all the things that are going on with your family right now. I just wanted to see if you had any insight on the Erie County Library right now. We're hearing rumors that they might be coming up with some plans on how that they can reopen or offer some curbside services.
Yes, and they are. I talked to Mary Jean Jakubowski, the director of the Buffalo and Erie County Public Library System. We do have the ability as a government in government-owned buildings. Not all the library buildings are governmentally owned. Some are owned by library associations. But I'll give a good example. The library downtown, the central library, that's owned by the people of Erie County. Pretty much every library in the city of Buffalo is owned by the city of Buffalo. They are putting together plans to bring back some of their staff. Mary Jean told me last week that they had more than 10,000 magazines that had arrived at the central library that needed to be distributed to the other libraries. So they have staff that needs to come back just to do work with regards to organization. And they are putting together a plan right now to do curbside pickup of library materials that people could order online. You can, of course, use your library card to order online. Normally, you would then pick up the materials when you got in the library, or if it's an ebook, it would just come to your e-reader. But they are working on a plan for certain libraries to offer curbside pickup, hopefully starting in phase two. But I know that I don't think they're just there yet, but they're close. So I think when we get to the point of phase two, we may also be able to talk about the libraries opening at least for curbside pickup, probably not in pickup or the normal services that you would see in the libraries. But I know they're working on a very important plan to ensure the safety, the sanitary conditions of the library going forward, and hopefully soon people will be able to order online the books that they want and then be able to pick them up outside the libraries through curbside pickup. The Buffalo News, Caitlin Dewey, Aaron Bessiker. Buffalo News, are you still there?
Yeah, hey, Mark. Sorry about that. I was wondering, with the, you just said phase two likely to move that way next week. Businesses, the state's putting out, has put out guidance for phase one. Businesses are awaiting guidance for phase two. I was wondering if you have any thoughts on what businesses can be doing at this point in terms of, as they're, things get moving in that direction.
Well, we expect any day now New York State to release the guidance for businesses in phase two. They released the guidance for businesses in phase one a few days before. Technically, it would be this Friday that the first areas, I believe, that met phase one, like the Finger Lakes region, would enter phase two. The governor has not announced that any region can move into phase two in a particular time yet. I've been told we should expect guidance on for businesses in the next couple of days, those that are in phase two. If you are a business that is in the phase two area, you should be putting together your plan right now. You can go to forward.ny.gov to get templates of plans. If your business is industry is not listed in one of those that they put a template for so far, you should still take a look at what the other templates have and start thinking about putting together a plan so when phase two comes, you can actually be the one that opens on that day. And remember, once you have that plan, you do not have to submit the plan to the state or the county, but you do need to file an affirmation, which is available on the state website, saying you have a plan. Then the state gives us that data so we know the business that have done it. And I have seen that there are some businesses in phase two that have already put together and say at least they have a plan and they've affirmed to New York State that they have it. WBFO, anyone on? Mike Baggerman, WBEN.
Mike Desmond.
Oh, Mike Desmond. Good to hear you, Michael.
Hey, you just mentioned the convention center, that discussion, but on the county legislature committee session tomorrow, there's conversation about a project out at ECC South and a new highway barn in Clarence for DPW. It sounds like in the background, there are things going on in county government. You're trying to keep things going in terrible circumstances.
Yes, there are projects that are going to move forward, both road projects as well as projects that are building projects that we have internally. We're not going to be able to do everything that we wanted to do this year, but we are moving forward. The Clarence Barns is a good example of that. We had to shut down the Clarence Barns due to a roofing issue. We moved them to a facility out in Lancaster, and we're going to be building a replacement facility. We have to do it. We needed to do it. The old barns was exceptionally old, and it become unsafe. So there's work that still needs to be done. We're going to be moving ahead with a number of projects this year, just not as many as we would have liked because of the financial issues that we're dealing with. But a number of the projects that are capital projects in which we borrow the money, and we expect to bond those later in the year, we will be moving forward because we have to. We can't just stop everything. Erie County, in some ways, is part of our economic business climate because we hire contractors, we hire consultants, we have our own employees, and we want to put as many people to work. We can't do every project. We are going to move forward with some. WBEN. Other Mike.
Hey, Mark. All my best to you and your family during this.
Thank you. Still there, Michael? I think we may have lost. Mike Baggerman, are you still there? Okay. Ethan Powers, B News.
Mark, can you hear me?
I can. Not certain who that was.
Hey, this is Mike Baggerman here.
Okay, Michael, go ahead. I can hear you now.
Okay, not sure what happened there, but glad you can hear me all right. All my best to you and your family. The Erie County Comptroller, as well as doctors, are wondering why hospitals in Erie County are still not allowed to do elective surgeries, even though we've met all the metrics. In fact, things are looking pretty swell, all things considered. What's your understanding from the state why hospitals can't do these electives?
Well, certain hospitals can do electives. I know of an individual who just had a knee replacement. Not every hospital can. We are advocating for Buffalo General to be allowed to do electives and the other non-ambulatory centers to do electives. It is not our call. It is in the New York State Department of Health. I've been in conversations with Lieutenant Governor and others, including just pretty much high up individuals in the governor's office to figure out what's going on. New York State Department of Health makes the call. I don't know why. I think they can do it. I was early on, I was the first person in the public to go out based on the data saying I thought we could start doing elective surgeries in our community again. It took them some time, but then they eventually authorized it for every hospital but Buffalo General. We think Buffalo General should be allowed to do it, as well as some of the non-hospital settings. But it's not my call. It's in New York State's hands. Ethan Powers, B News.
Hey, Mark. Question A is about the outline of the path forward. I know the governor's office has been deliberately vague in some ways about how each region will enter the next reopening phase. And of course, you're meeting daily with the region's task force. If we are indeed set to enter phase two next week and get on track for phase three, therefore in mid-June, do you have an idea as to when the task force would be able to publicly make a decision on entering phase three, or when that decision would come?
I like your attitude, Ethan, but let's get to phase two first. And we're going to watch the hospitalization numbers. What I'm fearful of is because there was so much activity outside and people enjoying themselves, a lot of them wearing masks, many of them not, this past weekend, that we're going to see an uptick in hospitalizations. And if we do, that may prevent us from even going into phase two. So let's get into phase two first, and then we'll take a look at it. I think there's also Caitlin Dewey of the Buffalo News. Caitlin, did you have a question?
Hello, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm having a lot of technological difficulties over here. County Executive, thank you so much for taking my question. So you've referred earlier to this notion that there might be a post-Memorial Day spike in hospitalizations, and that there wouldn't be time to evaluate that spike before phase two is slated to start on June 2nd. So I have two questions here. I'm curious if there's been any discussion within the regional control room about delaying the start of phase two so that there's an opportunity to evaluate that Memorial Day data. And secondly, I'm curious if you're concerned at all that you might not have the opportunity to evaluate that data before the region moves into the next phase.
Well, it is a concern. It has been discussed during the regional control room meetings. In the end, we provide the recommendation. The Lieutenant Governor will be talking with the governor, but then it's also the governor's office. If they say you've met the metrics, you can move on and stay and move on from phase one to phase two, you'll go to phase two. We met the metrics for phase one. It took us a couple more days in some of the other areas, but we did. And we've seen as a result that businesses started to kick back up. Hospitalizations did decline for a number of days in a row. Discharges exceeded hospitalization, new admissions in hospitals for 5 days in a row, and then the last 2 days they've exceeded it. But if we can keep the hospitalization numbers down, the death numbers down, we should be able to move into phase two. What that means for the future, we'll just have to wait and see. If in the next 3 or 4 days we saw a big spike in hospitalizations, I think it would be tough for us to argue that we could move right away to phase two. But we're going to make an analysis based on the data. Always based on the data, not just like we hope that we can be there, so let's do it. We're going to do it based on the data, and that data will then, the up or down, the thumbs up or thumbs down will come from the governor's office. It will not be done locally. That's what's happened in every situation. It's not the locals who determine whether or not they're going to reopen. It's the state. And if the state feels that our numbers are bad, they won't allow us to move to phase two. It's as simple as that. Go back to the top if there's any more questions from Jeff Russo, Channel 7.
I'm all set, County Executive. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you, Jeff. Marley Tuskus, Channel 4. Any more questions?
Yes, just really one quick one. When will it be safe to allow children on public playgrounds?
I don't know the answer to that question. We have not received guidance from New York State. We are internally looking at that with regards to our Parks Department. It is very, very difficult to ensure a clean sanitary surface when you have children that are constantly going up and down. We know that children are, especially younger ones, seems to be bastions of germs. If they can catch it, they usually get it. And it's not certain at this point when we'd be able to do that. I think we all want to be able to open it up. I think we all know what it was like as a kid and getting and having fun in playgrounds and but right now, we don't know when that will be, and I'm hoping it's as soon as possible. But until we can ensure the safety of it, I don't know when that'll be. I'm not certain you're ever going to be able to ensure the safety of it 100% of the time. I just don't know if that's possible. Unlike other things, like the drive-ins, they were talking about using bathrooms, and they were going to do it one at a time, and they were going to clean the bathroom in between each time that the person used it as drive-in. You can't do that with a playground. It's just impossible. So I don't know the answer to that question, and I'm hoping for further guidance from the New York State Department of Health on what their recommendation will be.
Thank you.
Steve Brown, you're welcome. Steve Brown, Channel 2.
Circling back to the county budget deficit, I know you're soon to deliver a recommendation to the legislature. I was curious about whether or not that recommendation takes into account the much talked about possible second wave and therefore maybe an impact on the county's economy, or if that would be a decision made about how to cut the budget later. So are both potential waves factored into this budget adjustment that you're working on?
I guess the best answer is yes and no. We have projections based on what we've seen so far, and we are amending those projections. So we've reduced the deficit percentage of the budget because our April numbers came in a little better than we thought they were going to be. As I said last week, the difference was between horrible and really bad. So really bad's not great, but it's better than horrible. So we're making adjustments based on what we think we'll be dealing with in the future. It's very difficult to do budgetary adjustments on a potential second wave in the fall. So we're basically going to have some conservative estimates. But it's tough to say exactly any one situation that could affect the budget with regards to the overall economy. But we do not budget liberally, so to speak. We budget conservatively. So we kind of plan for the worst case scenario. And that's what we did in the initial projections. We're not at the worst case scenario anymore. It's a little bit better. Still not great. But we will budget conservatively in what we send over to the legislature early next week. Aaron from Spectrum, do you have any more questions?
Yeah, one more question for you. What are the chances that we'll see things like public pools or beaches or splash pads even open up this summer for people to use?
I don't know. The county owns two beaches, one of which is has lifeguards, though we do not normally open those beaches for swimming until midsummer. I know everyone would love to get in the water now, considering how hot it is, but the water is still pretty cold. I don't know if you'd want to be in there. We want to ensure the safety of our recreational facilities. And if you saw some of the pictures from elsewhere across the country this weekend, you'll realize people did not practice safe social distancing. And when it comes to locations like pools, splash pads, which we do not have in Erie County government, but I know a lot of our local governments do, they've got to make a determination as to whether or not they can do it safely. Beaches, the governor did allow beaches to open, but it's up to the local government to decide, or the owner. But if they do open it, they have to meet the guidelines that New York State has in place. So it's a tough decision, especially when you're a local government, when your number one priority is to protect the health and welfare of your citizens. I know people want to get out there and have a great time. It's like closing the Eternal Flame Trail. I don't like closing the Eternal Flame Trail. And our Parks Department said, we're going to close the Eternal Flame Trail. Do you agree with us? And the answer was, if that's what you think you should do, yes. We don't want to do it, but if there are conditions in which people are getting injured, we have to shut it down. Thankfully, it dried out. It's much better. We can reopen it. But if we had 1,000 people on a beach and they were crammed in like sardines, then we'd have to seriously think whether we could continue with the beach. And is there a way to ensure that if we opened it even partially, we could still protect our citizens? And that's the decisions we're making on the local front. And as of right now, we in Erie County have decided we don't feel we can do enough to protect the citizens at the beach, so therefore our beaches are closed. And as I said, normally they would not be open for swimming anyway until mid-June when we were able to bring in our lifeguards. The Buffalo News, Caitlin or Aaron, any more questions?
That's it for me. Thank you very much.
All set. Thank you.
You're welcome. Mike Desmond, any more questions, WBFO?
Yeah. Yes. Your family is going through this, obviously, with a motorcycle accident, but I've talked to a lot of people. Is there any indication that you're going to change the rules on funerals and burials? I talked to someone the other day who was Jewish, and they were only allowed 5 people at the funeral, which traditionally you need 10 for the Kaddish. Is any of this going to change anytime soon?
I don't know, and it's not a decision that's being made on the local level. It is being made through New York State. The standards are the same on Long Island, just like they are in Western New York. So I know a lot of religious leaders would like to be able to expand services. You got to do it in a safe manner. It is a concern right now with my family. I know my cousins and my aunt and others are organizing what would be funeral services for my cousin, Amanda. And it's very difficult to do it when there's a limitation on how many individuals can be in a funeral parlor or church, no more than 10, of course. So it makes it exceptionally difficult to do that and have would be the normal grieving process. So, as we've seen elsewhere in the country, unfortunately, it's churches and funerals that often are where locations of our individuals are spreading the coronavirus. And then you have one individual who attends a funeral with 50 people, and then you find out afterwards that half of the people attending the funeral have the coronavirus. So it's got to be done safely. We are living in different times. I mean, I did not anticipate this earlier in the year when I first heard about the coronavirus. I don't think any of us want to be in this situation. I don't know any public official who wants to be in this situation and keep us closed or in reduced capacity any longer than we need to be. But we're working with professionals and we're relying on the scientific community to make the recommendations. And if we can continue to see what we've seen lately, which is our numbers going down, I think we'll see continual opening and more activity being put in place, including those that deal with religious services. We don't want to be like other parts of the country. Just before I came on air, I saw that Alabama now has some of the highest numbers it's ever had, and it's all happened since they basically have done reopening, and they just reopened without having a phased approach. I think New York has the appropriate approach. It's based off of the CDC's phased approach. And if we do that, I think we'll be much safer overall. If we just jumped up and opened everything right now, I don't want to go back through that. I don't want to go back through those early days when we saw our hospitalization numbers spike. That's not good. And I think if we continue the phased-in approach, we'll all be better for it. Mike Bagger, you're welcome. Mike from WBE.
Hi, Mark. The CDC has new guidelines out regarding antibody testing, and they said less than half of the people that test positive using an antibody test will truly have antibodies. So what's your, I guess, understanding of the accuracy of the antibody level or antibody testing at labs in Erie County?
I cannot speak for those outside of the Erie County Department of Health. We do feel confident about the test that's being administered through the Erie County Department of Health. It is not a fingerprint test. We know that those that are doing the fingerprint test, there's a serious concern about the validity of those tests. We do a blood draw test. I had it myself. They fill up the vial. It goes through the same type of analysis that other different types of viruses take to determine if antibodies are present. I don't have any indication to show that the issues they're talking about are dealing with the laboratory system that is being used by Erie County Department of Health. But we know that there are significant concerns about some of the smaller type of tests. We've heard some people say, well, I don't want the blood draw. I'm just going to get the finger prick because it's easier and I don't like blood in the first place. Well, that test may not be as good as others. And all I can talk about is what we've heard from our Erie County Department of Health public health lab tests is that they believe the validity of this test is very, very high because it's based off of testing protocols and machines that we've used in the past on viral tests to begin with. The last question goes to Ethan Powers of B News.
All set for today, Mark, and our thoughts here are very much with your family, so take care.
Thank you, Ethan. And once again, I want to thank everybody for participating in today's press conference. We will continue these as necessary. We have been scheduling a Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We did not have one on Monday because of Memorial Day. We may have one on Friday. We're going to try to limit the press conferences going forward, but we will be providing information to local media. We don't want to have a conference, a briefing, just to have a briefing, but we want to provide accurate information. It has been a number of days since the last one, so it was important that we have one today. I want to thank Kendra from Deaf Access Services once again for working very hard for the last hour to provide the American Sign Language to each and every one of you out there. And once again, I want to finish today's press conference in honor of my cousin Amanda Bolstad, who was taken far too soon last Saturday from us. Thank you, everyone.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.